Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
I think it's fitting to have this conversation around this particular subject because it does deal specifically with pricing and with transparency, both of which I think country of origin labeling addresses.
South Dakota Senator John Thune, at a Senate Ag Committee hearing on Wednesday, said country of origin labeling will come back up.
But I'm just telling you, I understand that perhaps today there aren't the votes to pass this, but I'm going to tell you that this is not an issue that's going to go away, and we're going to work very, very hard, and hopefully, I've talked with you about this, create an opportunity. We don't have a lot of markups on this committee. We typically, that happens around the farm bill, but this issue will be discussed and debated again.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
When the cost of oil does come down, we need the price at the gas stations that they charge at the pump to come down as well.
President Joe Biden on Wednesday calling for a three-month federal gas tax holiday.
In the last 2 weeks, the price of oil has fallen by more than $10 a barrel. Normally, this reduced the cost of the pump about 25 cents a gallon. Yet, so far, gas stations have only reduced prices by a few cents a gallon. Some haven't reduced prices at all. I've heard plenty of explanations from companies and economists about why it normally takes time for these price reductions to reach the consumer. I might note that the price of a barrel of oil goes up, it doesn't take much time for the price of the pump to go up. So let's be honest with one another. My message is simple. To the companies running gas stations and setting those prices at the pump, this is a time of war, global peril, Ukraine. These are not normal times. Bring down the price you are charging at the pump to reflect the cost you are paying for the product. Do it now. Do it today. Your customers, the American people, they need relief now.
So what is the administration's plan?
Today I'm calling for a federal gas tax holiday, state gas tax holiday for the equivalent relief to customers. Oil companies to use their profits to increase refining capacity rather than buy back their own stock. Gas stations to pass along the decrease in oil prices to lower prices at the pump. And together, these actions could help drop the price at the pump by up to $1 a gallon or more. It doesn't reduce all the pain, but it would be a big help. I'm doing my part. I want the Congress, the states, and the industry to do their part as well. And let's remember how we got here. Putin invaded Ukraine. Putin invaded Ukraine with 100,000 forces. Just look at the facts. Since the start of the war in Ukraine this year, gas prices have risen by almost $2 a gallon in the United States and sometimes more around the world. But it wasn't just Putin's invasion of Ukraine. It was refusal of the United States and the rest of the free world to let Putin get away with something we haven't seen since World War II.
President says it's Putin's fault.
I get the easy politics of the attack. I get that. But the simple truth is gas prices are up almost $2 a gallon because Vladimir Putin's ruthless attack on Ukraine, and we wouldn't let him get away with it. We're doing everything we can to reduce this pain at the pump now. And if those experiences have shown us anything, it's that we need to grow and harness more energy here at home. Let's lower the price of electric vehicles so we never have to pay at the pump in the first place. Major auto companies are preparing for 50% of future sales to be electric vehicles by 2030, 100% by 2035. We're already building secure supply chains to build these electric vehicles here in America. And we're investing almost $100 billion in public transit and rail. For all the studies show that it will take millions of cars off the road and significantly reduce pollution if there's a serious transportation system available. Let's keep accelerating our deployment of homegrown resources, sources of energy like solar and wind and nuclear and hydrogen and carbon capture storage, and keep developing the battery technologies so we can store that power we need when the sun doesn't shine or the wind doesn't blow.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
We give a lot of credit to Congress for quickly analyzing this, especially after COVID and the challenges that we had there in moving products around the world.
Andy Levine is president and CEO of the American Seed Trade Association.
We move a fair amount of seed through our seaports here in the United States, and that ability to have containers and to be able to offload them or unload them and ship them out is absolutely vital to our seed companies, because farmers are looking, there's a small window for farmers to plant, and we've got to make sure that we've got that available when they need it and not when the shipping company can get it to us. And so with the passage by Congress of the Ocean Shipping Reform Act and President Biden signing of it just last week, we think it's going to give us that opportunity to address some of the issues that we've had. The ocean carriers have had some of the ability to shift the burden of proof on the reasonableness clause in the shipping area. And the Ocean Shipping Reform Act shifted that back, and it's no longer on the backs of the person trying to ship a product through these vessels. It's now on the ocean vessel owners, that they are being reasonable in charging demurrage and detaining containers. So we like to see that. We want to work with those companies as much as possible, but we also need to make sure that they're not taking advantage of the U.S. Industry and the agriculture community.
And talks about the importance of investing in infrastructure.
You realize how valuable a system that we have in the United States is to moving crops, commodities, food, other things that we enjoy in our society, and how vital it is that we have one that's transparent and good collaboration from both importers and exporters and shippers and all those in the supply chain. And it's going to take a while for all of this to shake out, because while the ocean-going vessels are absolutely important, then you've got to be able to take it off and put it on a truck. And do we have the truck drivers to deal with that? Then you have to be able to take it off and put it on a train. And do we have the train capacity? And you realize that capacity has to be able to flex depending on the situations that are in front of any sector of our industries. So it is important. It's across the board, but it seems to be, it is especially challenging for those sectors that have perishable goods, who have, you know, just-in-time deliveries, who have those situations that need to be addressed in a timely manner and can't just store it in a facility, or there's not a margin there that would allow extended demurrage payments. So things like that are going to change. It's going to take us a little while, but I think this is a good direction.
And the importance of filling key trade posts.
Well, we've got two great nominees of the last 2 weeks for key trade positions for the agriculture community. The first is Secretary Alexis Taylor, who's out in Oregon at this time, the Secretary of Ag there. She's been nominated for the trade undersecretary at USDA. Great understanding of the importance of trade to our industry and just across the board, and we look forward to moving Secretary Taylor's nomination through the process as quickly as possible with the Senate Ag Committee and then the full Senate. And then the other appointee was Doug McCaleb, who is a special advisor to Secretary Vilsack. And Doug is very familiar with the agriculture industry in the U.S. and has great import-export experience through his days with USDA Animal Plant Health Inspection Service and their trade office. And he'll be a great trade negotiator and ambassador at the U.S. Trade Rep's office. And so we look forward to those two nominations, and we sure hope that we'll see them move through the system and the Senate as quickly as possible.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
I want to first express my appreciation for the hard work of the co-authors of this bill, Senator Grassley, Senator Fisher, for all your efforts put into this legislation. I know you both are champions for your state, and you understand the issues facing cattle operations across the country, and you're doing what you feel is best for the ag producers in your great states of Iowa and Nebraska.
At a Senate Ag Committee hearing on Wednesday on cattle markets, Kansas Senator Dr. Roger Marshall.
I certainly agree there's a problem. Simply stated, at times during this cattle cycle, any cattle cycle, there's not enough shackle space for the quantity of cattle in the supply chain and the demand at the supermarket at home and abroad. That pain's always amplified during so-called black swan events like pandemics or fire. And I want to make it very clear, I'm concerned with the level of concentration in the packing industry, not to mention the amount of foreign ownership in the industry as well. This is harming cow-calf operations and small feeders. No matter the industry, if you have three or four companies controlling 80 or more percent of any link in the supply chain, problems can arise. I want to make it clear, I support most of the bill. Kansans support most of this bill. Transparency is the nectar of free enterprise and capitalism, but capitalism without competition creates opportunities for exploitation. All that being said, I agree with American Farm Bureau and Kansas Farm Bureau and the Kansas Livestock Association that these mandates will actually harm feedlots and cow-calf operations in Kansas by empowering and giving more control to the big four packing plants. Thus, along with Senator Tuberville, I'm going to offer the following amendment, but withdraw it. This amendment eliminates the market acquisition mandate for fed cattle. I understand the frustrations of all the senators who authored and support this bill, and I share those frustrations, but a market mandate's the wrong approach. Economists are already warning that this mandate will reduce cattle prices received by cattlemen. It could cost cattle producers anywhere from $23 million to $249 million each year, and 90% of those costs appear to be borne by cattlemen in Kansas and the Southern Plains states. While this is an attempt to regulate the packer, the result is actually additional regulation of the cattle producer. This will give the packer most of the leverage to decide who gets the good deal and who gets the bad deal. The smallest of our feedlot producers and cow-calf operations will lose in this arrangement. The way to best address market problems is not through additional regulations that manipulate the market. Rather, we need to eliminate the red tape that ties the hands of industry. Let small producership meet interstate commerce. Pass our bona fide Beef Branding Act to provide more accurate label and address some of the concerns that Senator Thune mentions. Pass our Fair Meat Packing Act to help small and medium-sized packers compete with the big ones, reduce labor burdens, and allow packers to increase line speeds. There are several other transparency provisions in the bill I can support, but I simply cannot support a marketing mandate that disproportionately impacts Kansas cattle producers. Again, this amendment is simple and would remove the marketing mandate. Madam Chair, I don't intend to ask for a vote on this amendment today. Instead, I'll reserve it for floor consideration should this legislation come before the full Senate.
Kansas Senator Roger Marshall, and this is Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Chairman, I got a parliamentary inquiry following up on what Mr. Donalds raised. By what authority is this committee investigating a private business, a private entity, to hold this hearing?
The hearing, Dan Snyder's role in creating a hostile workplace with an NFL team, Representative Ralph Norman from South Carolina.
What authority do we have? Can you cite me that?
We have authority to investigate anything and everything, and we have putting forward legislation. Ms. Fox, you are now recognized.
Anything and everything.
We'll remember that, Madam Chair, in January.
That's a total embarrassment.
Carolyn Maloney from New York is the chair of the House Committee on Oversight and Reform.
I would like to clarify what I said before. This committee has the authority to investigate conduct within Congress's legislative jurisdiction, and that includes protecting women in the workplace. And this committee and my colleagues and I have already introduced two bills to address the problems that we saw in our investigation, and I'll be glad to share them with anyone on the committee.
Hearing on the House side focused on NFL owner Dan Snyder, but on the other side of Capitol Hill, Senate Ag Committee taking up livestock markets. Debbie Stabenow is the chair of the Senate Ag Committee.
I'm really pleased that we're considering two bills, S-3870, the Meat and Poultry Special Investigator Act of 2022, and S-4030, the Cattle Price Discovery and Transparency Act of 2022.
Ranking member of the Senate Ag Committee is from Arkansas, Dr. John Bozeman.
The question I have is whether the proposals before us this morning are the solutions to those problems. What I fear are the unintended consequences. The cattle industry has made tremendous strides in meeting consumer demand since the 1990s. Investments in genetics and breeding decisions and specialized marketing have brought real returns to ranch families that have chosen to take those steps. These investments have kept families ranching while producing high-quality beef demanded by consumers. If the incentive for those investments is taken away and the focus becomes producing the most pounds for the lowest cost, I think the industry, our ranch families, and our rural communities will all suffer. If we insert the federal government into day-to-day business decisions, repealing that heavy hand of the government is nearly impossible. Regarding S-3870, the Meat and Poultry Special Investigator Act of 2022, I also have some concerns. This legislation would subject nearly 1,000 meat and poultry processing facilities to review by the special investigator. Of those 1,000, approximately 20 are fed cattle facilities owned by the large packers. The large packers have legal departments and regulatory compliance experts on staff, not so for the smaller processors. Are we creating an additional burden on small business? Government lawyers don't bill by the hour, but the lawyers it will take to represent these small businesses do, and they will solely be responsible for these costs. We already have a Packers and Stockyards division. If funding is the issue, let's address that. If staffing is the issue, let's address that. But creating a new office to focus on something USDA can already do doesn't seem like the best course of action in my mind.
Senate Ag Committee advanced both the Meat and Poultry Special Investigator Act and the Cattle Price Discovery and Transparency Act. It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
The amazing thing about the American Seed Trade Association is we were founded over 135 years ago in 1883 on the basis of developing quality germplasm for America's farmers.
Andy Levine, President and CEO of the American Seed Trade Association.
That still is our ultimate goal as we bring products to the American farmers and homeowners and land managers. It's across the board. That quality seed is important for produce growers, for flower growers, for turf grass managers, just all across the board. And we look at it, especially as we talked about this opportunity and conservation in that arena, it's important when farmers are making decisions about cover crops as well.
Talking about a resource that ASTA or ASTA has.
We realize that that's a challenge as farmers look to make sure that they are meeting the goals that they have for their conservation efforts on their farm and their operations. We wanted to make sure that they knew where to buy that professionally produced regional seed. And we've created a landing page on the ASTA website, which is betterseed.org. And on that site, we've got a map, and farmers can go on in their regions, the seven regions of the country, including Mexico and Canada, as a matter of fact, so actually nine regions, where people can go on and see where professionally produced seed is available and the companies that are producing that seed.
And what about the upcoming farm bill?
There are similar priorities as we've had in the past and some new ones. I always look at our first number one priority is agricultural research. That's just the bedrock of the seed industry. It is how we bring new varieties into the marketplace, that public-private relationship that we have with our land-grant institutions and USDA's research programs that they've got under the REE Undersecretary are just vital for us. And so that's our number one core as we look at it. We've got to push strong, vibrant, resource, funded agricultural research. And that comes from the Farm Bill, a lot of that direction. You know, we've got conservation programs that are going to continue to be key. And the cover crop sustainability discussion, I think, will fall under that area in this Farm Bill. I don't think this is going to go away, or we don't think this is going to go away in discussions with the House and Senate and the administration and the public. You know, we want to help the farmers as much as possible on the sustainability front and encouraging them to do and providing them the resources to do what they can on their operations. And then looking at plant breeding innovations, it does fall in that ag research area, but dealing with the policy of it, how can we make sure that all crops have the ability to use innovation in plant breeding, in genetics, in discovery, and use it in a way that continues to evolve, not restricts that capacity. We don't need a new breeding method like gene editing to only be available to breeders in corn, soybeans, and cotton. It needs to be available in produce, in tree crops, in vine crops, in cover crops, you know, forage crops, others across the board so that farmers can take advantage of innovation no matter what crop they grow on their operations. So those are probably our core ones. Continue to strongly support the agriculture community and the various associations and their priorities because ultimately they're our partners that we bring new products to. And so we need to make sure that they've got good, strong programs that that follow them as well.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
I'd like to talk to you about the actions I'm announcing to bring down gas prices.
President Joe Biden on Wednesday.
Today I'm calling on Congress to suspend the federal gas tax for the next 90 days through the busy summer season, busy travel season. Here's what that means. Every time you go to the gas station to fill your tank, the federal government charges an 18-cent tax per gallon of gas that you purchase and a 24-cent tax per gallon of diesel you purchase. It's a tax that's been around for 90 years. It's important because we use it for the Highway Trust Fund to keep our highways going. But what I'm proposing is suspending the federal gas tax without affecting the Highway Trust Fund.
And he explains.
With the tax revenues up this year and our deficit down over $1.6 trillion this year alone, we'll still be able to fix our highways and bring down prices of gas. We can do both at the same time. By suspending the 18-cent gas tax, federal gas tax, for the next 90 days, we can bring down the price of gas and give families just a little bit of relief. I call on the companies to pass this along, every penny of this 18-cent reduction, to the consumers. There's no time now for profiteering. There are a number of other proposals by Democrats in the House and the Senate, and I hope my call for action can help move those proposals forward as well.
But he'll need some help from the states.
We can also cut gas prices even more in another way. That's why the second action I'm taking is calling on states to either suspend the state gas tax as well or find other ways to deliver some relief. State gas taxes average 30 cents per gallon. Already, some states have acted. In Connecticut and New York, the governors have temporarily suspended their gas tax as well. In Illinois and Colorado, governors delayed theirs to give families a bit more breathing room as well. In Minnesota, Governor Waltz proposes using state budget surpluses to give households a rebate that will help them pay for gas at the pump or other essential needs. I'm calling on more states and local governments to take actions like these. Thanks to our historic economic recovery, which fortified state budgets that had been hurt in the pandemic, states are now in a strong position to be able to afford to take some of these actions.
And what part do oil companies play?
I'm calling on the industry to refine more oil into gasoline and to bring down gas prices. Let me explain. I know my Republican friends claim we're not producing enough oil, and I'm limiting oil production. Quite frankly, that's nonsense. Here's the truth. Just this month, America produced 12 million barrels of oil per day. That's the highest, that's higher than average under my predecessor. And we're on track to set a new record for production next year. Plus, I've added to that supply of oil by releasing a record 1 million barrels of oil per day from what's called the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. In fact, I just led the world to coordinate the largest release of global oil reserves in history, including from other countries. In total, that's 240 million barrels to boost global supply.
And then there's biofuels.
My administration also directed the sale of gasoline using homegrown biofuels, ethanol, E15, this summer, which will boost gasoline supplies and lower the price at thousands of gas stations across America.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Despite much higher prices for farm production inputs and despite much lower government payments to farmers this year,
most crops will likely still result in positive net cash farm income.
With one exception, Texas A&M University ag economist Dr. Joe Outlaw telling a congressional panel,
the only farms we have that really aren't going to cash flow this year are rice farms.
He says of the rice producers his group follows,
two-thirds of them will not cash flow.
This even though USDA this week is projecting rice prices this season to average about 12% more than this past season. One reason prices aren't even higher, though, is that world rice output this year is projected record high, keeping a lid on world rice prices, which play a major role in determining prices U.S. growers get. Prices not high enough to prevent major losses. Dr. Outlaw says producers may need some direct government help this year. Without it, he says,
these losses are going to happen.
This is Gary Crawford, Washington.